Welcome to the Hired by Passion podcast. I'm your host, Marcel Richard, and I will be interviewing artists and entrepreneurs on how they were able to escape the 9-to-5 and turn their passion into an income. Hello, and thanks for choosing to listen to the Hired by Passion podcast. I'm glad you're with me today. In this episode, I bring you an interview with somebody I really enjoy talking to. He's someone I had on a French radio show that I did way back. And I had him a few times at the show. It was always a great conversation. He would hang out with us and after the show was done. And I really enjoyed talking to this guy. And this guy is a real rock star. If you're gonna paint a picture of what a rock star should be, this guy is probably the first guy that comes to mind for me. And I was really happy to have him on the show with me to talk to me a bit about his process, how he got into things, and how he made his career in music and how he evolved and all these different things that I thought were fascinating. So this week on the show, I have Steven LeBlanc. He's a versatile Canadian musician with a long track record of accolades. He has multiple album awards, television appearance, radio singles, and he's extensively toured with his bands like the cult favorite and Acoustic Sin and the hard rock project known as Tracy Star. He's known locally in the bar scene where I'm from, and I've seen him multiple times when I was at university and always loved his shows. But he's also toured internationally with violinist Dominique Dupuis, Acadian folk artist Fayot, Roland Gauvin and the Grouse Band, and many more. And in this episode, we talk about how he went from being a guitar player to an entertainer and how storytelling had an important part in his music shows. He talks about reading the crowd and giving an authentic experience and giving the crowd what they want and creating something with them, using that energy, and how that made a difference for him. And he talks about being resilient and pushing through challenges, as we did record this in COVID times. And he was one of the first that I saw that started live streaming music, and how he went about to doing that and how he felt about it, which was interesting. And I think it shows the tenacity that you have for someone to be able to make their living in their art, because that's what he did. He's been playing music for over 30 years, maybe 35 years. So to have such an enduring career of not having a day job, being able to live from music is something not a lot of people can do. And I really enjoyed my conversation with him. So without any further ado, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Steven LeBlanc. I'm here with Steven LeBlanc, and I'm going to ask you the first question that I ask everyone, which is when you meet someone for the first time and they ask you that famous question, what do you do? What's your answer to that question?
I'm an entertainer.
So just simple as that, you leave it to the one kind of line. What kind of follow-up questions do you get to that?
I think that most people say, oh, well, what do you do? You're an entertainer. What do you do? And I always say, well, it's pretty vast because I sing, I play the guitar, but I play lots of instruments and I back up a lot of other musicians. Like I play in several different bands doing different kinds of things. But I also, do recordings and I do live streams. I played on albums. I've done videos. It just encompasses so much.
Okay. Has that answer always been, I'm an entertainer? So has that evolved over the years? Have you started, because I know you kind of started playing guitar by playing guitar, but eventually you led to doing all these other things. So has your answer evolved over time, or have you always seen yourself as an entertainer?
No, I haven't. I think I definitely from the beginning, I was a guitar player. What do you do? I'm a guitar player. That's what I do. It's just that I think as a guitar player or as a musician, I've grown over the years to become an entertainer because, to make a living and to live my passion, I think it was something that was a natural progression where I needed to become an entertainer. I had to do a lot of things alone, like perform alone with just me and my guitar, for example, and I learned a lot by doing that. And one of the important things that I've learned is that, you just don't go up on a stage or on a screen and just play the tunes. You've got to do so much more than that. There's a visual, there's talking to the people between the songs. There's all kinds of different, storytelling. So it just encompasses a lot of different things, but definitely in the beginning, I'm sure that's not, I wasn't doing any of that at all. I was just a guitar player. I played the guitar, played guitar in bands, and I didn't even sing actually, so, uh, So it's definitely grown and changed over the years, for sure.
I really love that you brought that point, because that's something I really wanted to talk to you about, because I've been following along, watching your live. I've watched you perform many times. And something that just recently really struck me, especially in this COVID times when you're doing these Facebook Lives, is that you're so good at telling stories. And I do enjoy the storytelling aspect so much. And I'm glad that you brought it up, because I'm wondering if this is something that you actively worked on to improve it. And if so, how did you do that? Or is this something that gradually you tried and then it got better?
I think it probably happened by accident. I think that maybe at one point, you know, it came into my mind while I was playing a show where maybe it was a certain song related to something in my life, and I might have told a story about it for the first time, you know, without planning it. And I think I realized that people re-mentioned when I was telling the story, and people really dug that. And I think that what I've learned is that the more you do that, more that you're yourself doing it. At first, I think when I first did it and discovered that maybe there was a lot of entertainment value to telling a story, I think when I first discovered that, like everything else, you really want to capitalize on that and make it really good. And then, so then I was planning, what I was doing, but then I realized that doesn't work, because I think the human aspect of it is what people like. Maybe I think the honesty and people want something authentic, including myself more and more these days. And I think the storytelling, I think that if it's really authentic and it's not planned out and you're just being completely honest and authentic when you're telling the story, I think people are even more captivated by that. Of course, I don't know this for sure, but this is what I've been finding, because like you said, wanting to ask me about the storytelling, I know that since I've been doing the live streams, a lot of people have been asking me or messaging me and telling me how much they love the stories. And I was saying that to my wife, that the stories are really working. Like it's something that, and they're not planned. It's just, it's what I do live now. I play songs, and often I won't just play the song. I'll tell the story with it, not every song, but a lot of the songs. But I just think that when it's authentic, I think people really dig that. I think if I worked it out and planned the story and wrote it out and tried to script it, it would really not interesting to people.
I'm very curious to maybe dig in a bit deeper on that, because I understand what you mean, because sometimes, and I've done stand-up comedy, and sometimes I've written down, well, most of the times I've written down everything I would say on stage, and I would practice it to the point that I would go on stage and say word for word what I've written down. And sometimes I've kind of winged it a bit. Like I knew what I was doing. I knew where it was going. Almost when I winged it, it went better than when I was doing it word for word, which I would have thought would be better word for word. But I'm wondering if it's this authenticity thing that you're talking about. And have you written in some stories down word for word and felt, and like, have you done that exercise of writing them down and tried it and didn't feel that it resonated with the audience as much as when you're just kind of winging it?
Yeah, I think many years ago, I've tried that when I was starting out entertaining alone. Maybe like in a bar or whatever, I may have had a set list and maybe have written a couple stories to go with some songs to try to perfect what I was doing. But I found that the more I tried to perfect it, the more it wasn't as good. it just kind of wasn't as good. I think what happens is, and it's, I'm sure that it's like you with the comedy. You have talking points. You know the story in your mind, and there's certain things about it that just come to you anyway. So it doesn't have to be, it needs to be worded naturally, and it needs to come from you, like it's like you when you're telling a joke, it's like, what the joke is, or if you're, you're telling a funny story, well, where the story is funny. So as long as you get to those points, that's what's important. Everything that's in between is not important, just the fact that you're doing it on the fly cross better. I mean, nothing is better than what's happening in the moment. It's like music. Like sometimes when you're playing music, a song is you play it a certain way with a certain kind of energy to it. And one night that might work really well, but you might do the exact same thing the second night and it doesn't work at all.
Does that happen?
It happens all the time. Well, it doesn't happen to me now because I'm aware that I have to go with what's happening in the moment and feel that out. And it's really important. Like you know, if it, depending on the energy that I'm getting from the crowd, I'll perform a song a certain way. But if I'm getting a different energy from the crowd, I will actually change the energy and the way that I perform the song to fit what's going on in that room at that moment. And I find that I've learned that over the years, and I find that it works way better. Even if the first night that I did it is a better version, in my opinion, doesn't mean that the better version is better for the moment that you're playing it in. Sometimes it's, when you're performing live, whether it's online, performing in front of a crowd, it's all about vibe and energy. The music or the stories or the comedy, for instance, is all just a backdrop for what is happening at that moment. And as an artist or a performer, an entertainer, you have to remember that at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Like I know that, you know, you could go see if you like Pink Floyd and you go watch Pink Floyd live and they do their show one way and that's the way it is. And you're a big Pink Floyd fan and that's what you go see and you're paying your $300 ticket price to go see exactly that. Well, maybe in that situation, it's different, you know, but on my level, I just find that the different kinds of venues that I'm playing at often aren't people that are paying tickets to see me. It might be somebody that's never seen me before, you know, maybe half the room see me, but the other half hasn't. And so for me, I just find it's always been about trying to find what's going to work at that moment with the people that are in that room and the vibe and the energy that's happening at that moment. That's what you got to go with. And if you lean on that, you'll have way more success than leaning on actual music or your jokes. The jokes and the music are just the backdrop to what's happening at that moment. And once you get that vision, it becomes very easy to make the night work really, really well and be successful at it because you're seeing it from a bigger angle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I really love this. And I love how it almost, I'm wondering how much of a correlation there is between what you said at the start and what you're saying now. So you said that, you know, at the start, you were a guitarist, you're playing guitar and songs, and now you're an entertainer. And I'm wondering how it's linked to you realizing that you have to play with this energy. You're not just playing the songs. You're using the energy, feeling the vibe, and you're doing your thing. And I feel those things are maybe really related in how, you know, you started out probably thinking that you had to play the music the best you could, but then you realize that you're not playing guitar. You're an entertainer.
That exactly. You come to the, me as a guitar player, I came to the realization that playing the guitar really well, an afterthought. It's not even a focus, you know. Of course, I had to get good enough for it to be an afterthought. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, in the beginning, it was all about perfecting what you're doing. And you get to a certain point where you keep trying to perfect it, but that actually doesn't really get you any further, because what you do as a musician is bigger than just playing your instrument. Just like being a comedian, it's bigger. What you're doing is you're an entertainer also, and you're trying to make people laugh. And you have to really go with the bigger picture to make them laugh. Yes, the jokes are technically going to make them laugh, but that's an afterthought. It's all about how you're going to deliver that and deliver it with the kind of people that you have in front of you at that moment and choosing the right ones. And so there's a bigger picture to being an entertainer, and you're right. Like for me, I guess that's why I say I'm an entertainer now instead of a guitar player, because the scope of what I do has become so much bigger than just playing the guitar. You know, it's like there's so much more psychology behind what I do. I always said, you know, for me, like what I do, like I go play in a venue and every venue is different. You know, I could be playing a festival outside for the city of Moncton, or I could be playing in a small bar like the Igloo in Moncton, or I could be doing, I could be playing with a cover band playing for the Grey Cop, like, or, you know, or playing with an acoustic sin or whatever. Each thing is kind of different and I have a different role in each thing. But definitely when I'm doing the solo thing, each venue calls for a different, it's got a different purpose, right? Like in a bar, I'm there to show people a good time, for example, right? I'm there because people left their home and they went to the venue or the bar because they want to have fun, right? And that in mind, when I walk on stage and when I look at the big picture, I'm keeping in mind people didn't come out because they want to see me show off. Maybe they do here and there, but the bottom line is they want to have a good time. You know, they've come out and they're spending their money because they need a break, you know, and I keep that in mind. So I always try to perform in a way that when they walk out of there, they're going to say, that was fun. You know, that's a, but then other kinds of venues that I play in, it's all about, I know they want to see me and play the guitar and show what I can do. And in those situations, I put away that other sort of thing and I look at it in a different aspect and I take out a more different approach, you know?
Yeah. So it's really, I think this is like really high level stuff where you only get there maybe after a lot of experience, but I'm wondering if there's anything that happened at one point that you're like, oh yeah, this is why I have to change. Like, this is why, you know, you were practicing when at one point you were probably practicing to be a better guitarist. And like you said, you realized that that's only going to bring you so far. So is there any kind of pivotal moments that you can think of that, okay, this is what I have to do now?
Well, I there may be a few. I think performing with people, like being in bands with people that were really good men, you know, because when you're playing in a band, not really, like me as a guitar player, if I wasn't the singer, I wasn't the front man, you know, I just worried about playing the guitar. I always wanted to put on a good show on stage as a guitar player, but never really talked to the crowd or was never really part of that part. It was always the front guy. And I've been fortunate enough to play with a few guys that are fantastic front men. And I always paid attention, you know, and as I learned a lot from watching them and what they do and discussing with them also, you know, like, geez, I'm going to be doing something alone next week at a venue or whatever. And how do you do that? You know, and asking them questions, because it's some of those guys have had a lot of experience, right? So watching good front men has really helped me a lot like that. And I think that, and also, you know, going out and getting up on a stage by yourself in the early days and realizing that, again, like I said earlier, playing the music just doesn't cut it. You can't just go up there and have a list in front of you and play songs. We talked about spontaneity a minute ago, and you were saying how sometimes when you go off a little bit, sometimes it works out better. That's another example of that. You know, when in the early days, I'd go on and have a complete set list set up, and I would like follow that to a T because I thought that was a professional way to do it. And I realized that venues that I play in, it's better to walk on stage with nothing in front of me at all and actually maybe choose the first three songs. And after that, once I start communicating with the crowd ends up deciding what I'm going to, and end up having a better time and making my job easier because they're really involved in what I'm doing. And yeah, so
yeah. That again comes up to a high degree of one confidence skill and confidence, right? To be able to just take requests like that is not, it's something that you have to be one.
Sure. Absolutely. And I know that, you know, I say that, I know that not everybody can do that. I realize that. But at the same time, you know what? I'll tell you, like, I've stuck my neck out a lot, like, in the sense that, like, a lot of the music that people ask me to play, very often, more often than not, I don't know the song. So it's not like I necessarily know a million songs, but I do know my instrument really well. I know it well, and I know, like, if somebody asks for a song, and I may not know the song, but when I say know it, I don't know how to play it. But if I've heard it enough times on the radio and I'm familiar, like everybody else is, oh yeah, I've heard that a million times on the radio, and I know the words kind of enough to get by, I can play the guitar to it, no problem. I'll just find what key it's in. And then once I start it, I can pretty much get through anything, you know, it's a complex jazz song, you know, which nobody ever asked for, so it's okay.
Do you have a way to remember all these songs? Like, even all the lyrics, like I'm sure that you probably fub the lyrics once in a while, but it's still, oh, yeah. Like, how do you remember all of these? Did you always find that you had this incredible memory, or
I don't know. I think I grew up with a lot of music at home. I think my dad was an audiophile. He wasn't a musician, but he was an audiophile. And so I grew up hearing music from the time I was a baby to was an adult, like all the time. There was always music playing and all kinds of different music from everything. He loved everything. And so I just was a big part of my life even before I was a musician. I wasn't even aware of that. To me, as a kid, that was just normal. But I think that all imprinted on me. And then when I became a musician, and then as I became, got better and started playing alone and singing and entertaining, I realized that all that stuff's just in the back of my mind somewhere. It's like, you know, it's like, it's just, so it's not a conscious effort. It wasn't like I went out and tried to learn songs. In fact, sometimes when I want to do a song, let's say, you know, there's something that I want to add to my repertoire that might be more complicated, that I want to learn to broaden my, you know, I learn it for my own personal reasons. And I have to learn the words. Sometimes I find it really difficult to learn all those words. But in general, such a big library of music, of popular music that's in my mind, the lyrics. And if you asked me to write down the song and write down the lyrics, I wouldn't be able to. But once I start the song and I hit the first line, it'll just kind of come to me as I'm singing it. So it's not like I can see the whole song in my head. It just sort of comes to me, like as I'm singing the verse. It's like the next word comes to me right on the spot. You know, it's weird.
I think a lot of people can relate in that way because I know I'm like that. I can hear the song in my head, but I can't speak it. Like I hear it playing in my head. Like I can't, but if you can develop that skill of being able to actually sing the lyrics of the song that you're hearing in your head, maybe that's the skill that you developed, right? Over time. And do you remember the first time that you took a request like that and played it live? Like it must have been exhilarating if it worked. And I imagine sometimes it kind of failed. And I'm kind of curious.
Absolutely. Yeah. I still fail. Because I'm always going with that whole bigger picture when I'm on a stage. It's not about to, I'm not trying to show how good I am. I'm trying to make the room work. And sometimes somebody will ask or something where I think I might be able to go through with it. And I can't, you know, I'll start and then it doesn't work. Whether I really flub up the words and I get lost, or there's a weird chord in there that I can't find, or it's way out of my range and I didn't realize it until my vocal range. And I don't realize it until I get to that part and I'm like, oh my God, I can't hit that note, you know? But again, those situations, I try to use them as, you know, people are very thankful when you try to do something like that. And if you fail at it, people don't look down on you. I find that most of the time people are they love it. They'll clap their hands, even though you can't finish it. They'll be really happy that you tried and it's all good. And it becomes part of the show. And I think that's what I try to do when those situations happen to me. I try to laugh it off and people laugh it off too. And they love it. You know, you can't plan those moments, but when they happen, they're actually pretty great because they show humility and they show, again, authenticity, right? And like I said earlier, I think these days people are looking more and more for that sort of thing, especially with the COVID crisis. I thought, like, I'm blown away, like at like live streaming. You know, you've got, when you think about it, you know, you can go on YouTube and you can watch anything that you want. And you can see videos and concerts. You can see all kinds of things. But, you know, people are tuning in and watching local musicians live stream by the hundreds, you know, like, and it's really cool. And I really feel like, and I do it too, like on Saturday night, I'll sit on my couch and I'll go look who's playing, you know, and I think it's authenticity, you know, it's like, I think that's what people are looking for in a weird way. I think it's just really real, you know. There's no fireworks. It's not mess up at any moment. And I think people like that.
And it's such a really interesting realization as well. Cause like you said, you can go out and you can watch on YouTube anything you want. You can watch any kind of live performance you can usually kind of find all these live performances out there. And to somebody to come out and supporting the local musicians is super interesting. And it kind of leads me to wonder so you were the first one that I saw live stream some music, and I'm sure you weren't the first, but you did it fairly early on. And I'm wondering the process that you took to do this, and why did you decide to do it, and kind of what was your experience in, all right, well, now I'm not playing live, I'm going to do this.
Well, it happened with people messaging me saying, like, when it all first began with the, you know, quarantine, and then a bunch of my gigs had got canceled. And I think I'd written a post on social media where I said, you know, wow, this is, and it's canceled and blah, blah, blah. And then, so a bunch of people commented or messaged me and said, well, you should live stream. And I remember thinking to myself at that moment, thinking, oh man, I don't want to do that. I'm not really comfortable with doing that. I mean, because of what I do as an entertainer, I really didn't feel like in front of a camera, in front of a computer, I'd be able to do the entertainment value that I, with what I do. And I thought, you know, I don't think I can do what I do well in that format, you know. And, but that said, the first week, you know, I just thought, you know what, I gotta have to do something. I mean, it might be months. Like, so, and lucky for me, actually, I without even realizing it, I had all the equipment. Like, I've got like a green screen, I've got a DSLR camera, I've got all the audio equipment, the lighting, I've got everything, because of, you know, I'd bought some equipment for an acoustic sin, because we had made some videos, and of course once in a while I make my own guitar videos and stuff. So I had all this gear, which at first didn't realize that I'd be able to use for live streaming. But when I first started playing around with trying to do the live stream, not in front of people, but like checking it out, I realized like I didn't like the way it sounded. I didn't like the way it looked. So then I started incorporating some of the equipment and figuring out how to use it. So I spent about a good 2 weeks really learning from actually, you're going to find this interesting, because I would Google musicians live streaming to find out what, how to use my DSLR camera instead of using my webcam, and how to use my audio interface to live stream instead of using, you know, how was I going to go about that, and how to make it look good. But no musicians were doing it yet. Like, it was really like, I couldn't find anything on it. And where I found a lot of information was looking up gamers. Because gamers have been live streaming with green screens and DSLRs and all kinds of stuff for a long time. So I actually spent a couple weeks watching videos of gamers and how they do what they do when they live stream. And that's basically where I got it. And then I went on live. Now, the first couple times I didn't use a green screen, but then after I started using the green screen. So it was a big learning curve, and there was a lot to learn, but it was really important to me if I was going to do this, that it was going to be high quality. I really didn't want to do something, especially because I had the gear. I couldn't justify not putting the effort in, because I thought, you know what, Steve, work. There's nothing that you can do. This is your time and your chance to learn how to do this well, because it might be your future for a while now, and you need to do it right, you know? And so, yeah.
You find, I'm kind of curious on how you're dealing with the lack of energy, because you're talking about being an entertainer, feeding off the crowd, and here, like, it's very hard on Facebook Live. I've done it, and the delay is very hard to deal with. And I'm wondering how do you use the kind of energy, or what kind of, how do you find the energy?
It's very interesting, actually. What I do, it goes against what I have talked about, but it doesn't really. It's delayed again. What I've been doing is every week that I perform, the night or a couple days after, I go read all the comments. And what I do is I read all the comments, and whatever requests that people have, I mark them all down, and I write who requested it, and you know. And so when I play the week after, I have that on the wall. Now, I don't have to follow it to a T, because if my eye catches on the comments live in front of me, if my eye catches a song and let's do that, you know, but if not, I do have a map to follow from what happened in the week previously that I missed in the comments. So that helps, gives me a little direction. So basically I'm reacting a week later, and that sort of is what's giving me the energy. I'm bringing that next week. And of course, I still tell the stories. The stories just come naturally to me now, because, you know, I'll see the songs and I know, like, you know, the stories I don't think about, they just come usually. So, So that's been how I've been doing that part of it. So it's a mixture of catching my eye on the screen, catching the request, and also marking down what happened the week before request-wise and who asked for them. So I've been working. I've been pleasantly surprised with, because I watch my live streams every week after the fact, and I sort of examine them, see if I can improve them somehow. But I find that for not having people in front of me live, I'm pleased with how it's coming across, energy wise, you know?
Yeah. And this is not criticism, but a compliment I can give to you. I've seen you play in a crowd where there were like very few people in the crowd, and yet you still played like there was a full crowd. And I think that's a skill that not everybody has. And is it something that you learn to develop? And how do you do that? How do you try to put up the energy and give a performance of 1,000 people when there's, you know, 10 people in the crowd?
Well, it's absolutely harder for sure. You know, I mean, if you're playing in front of 400 people or if you're playing in front of 15, you know, it changes it. But I think for me, it just, I think it's always been important to me to be consistent in what you do. And I just try to find the energy within myself, because I always felt like I've, you know, in the past I've seen musicians where they've played in front of, 10 people or whatever the case may be. And I've seen how their lack of energy or letting that get to them and letting it show really sucks. You know, I mean, the 15 people that are in front of you are there because they like you and they want to see you. And maybe they don't care that there's not another 150 people in the room with them. So you can't let that bother you. You got to play for the 15 people that are in front of you, you know, like it's, I just think it's really important to do that. And I've always, I read a lot about artists that are successful, you know, I play music for a living and I'm an entertainer. I'm always interested in hearing what other people that have had success say. Even if I would never have success like those people, you can still learn from them, and incorporate it in what you do. And sometimes and what I've found is that, you know, a lot of artists that we like, you know, people that are famous, that are legendary, 30 years still go through that too, you know, or throughout their careers, even when they were popular, you know, they might've put in an album and their style wasn't good for a while. You know, you take a band like, I'm thinking, for example, it's a good example of that. They show it in that Motley Crue movie on Netflix where, you know, Motley Crue had a big rise, you know, and they were a great band and they were popular and they had some big albums. And then they put out an album with John Corabi and they're playing in front of empty rooms, you know. Well, you know, still kept going on. And you know what? Came back later and they were as big as ever, you know, and I guess I'm not anything like that. I realize that that's not what I mean. What I mean is that you just got to keep going on. You know, people that are really successful that have longevity in their career is they do it because they love it and they play for the people that like them. Sometimes they're hot, sometimes they're not. But when you're not, you don't change what you do. You do it for the people that want to see it, you know, and my experience, it's in waves. You know, you're hot for a while and you're not for a while. Somebody else takes over, but then comes back. And every time it comes back, you're hotter because it's like you've got a history. And then it keeps going and going and going. But to get to that point, you have to be able to have the constitution to be able to through play in front of 10 people. And do it well, you know, and this goes at music. It goes at comedy. It goes with any kind of business, really. I think, you know, it's just think for any kind of business. It's key, you know?
And I do agree. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that start something, it fails. They start something else, it fails. And it's funny how the overnight success type thing, there's no overnight success, but it does seem like it's overnight success. It's just that you don't see all the peddling that you've done.
But you only hear about it when it's successful.
Exactly. I'm wondering, because you've had probably over 30 years of career now in music, and have you always felt like that? And I'm curious on when did things change and how did you get to that point? I guess when you were, 14, 15 in your first band, Savage, did that, you probably didn't have that mentality. And I'm wondering, how do you think that it developed?
I think maybe like I had moved to Toronto with a band in the early 90s, I guess. And or late 80s, I can't remember. But the thing is, we had thought we were going to be rock stars.
Would that be an acoustic sin or
no? This was a band called Exotic Gypsy, and we all moved up there and we played there for a couple of years, and it went well. But after a while, they didn't. And I came back and I thought I was done. I was going to go to university and I was done with music. It was going to be a side thing. I was still teaching guitar, mind you, and. But it ended up, then I couldn't stay away. And then it I started playing with another band, and it was, it was just a cover band in a bar, but like we did really well. And that went on for a couple years, and then it kind of fell apart. And then I did something else with somebody else. And then that, so I learned early on that, or as I went along, I learned that thing can be made successful if you really want it to. You can succeed. You can, in the case of being an artist or a musician, you can make any band successful if you push hard enough and you work hard enough. That's actually not the hard part. Hard part is to stay there. That's the hard part. And that's one thing that I've learned through the years is that it's hard to stay there. All those bands that I'm talking about are long, long gone. They're long gone. And Acoustic Sin would have been a learning experience for me because we went through a similar thing, had a really strong following and had a lot of success. And we did disband, but we got back together and we kind of did stuff throughout the years and kept going. So an Acoustic Sin is kept. It's got a longevity to it and it's got a history to it. And we never quit. And there's times that we're hot and there's times that we're not, but we don't care. We keep going. But like I said, when we're hot, we're really hot because we've got a history and we've got people that have been following us for 25 years. So, and it's the same as me, just Stephen LeBlanc by myself. It's like, sometimes I'm happening and other times I'm not, but I really care because I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. And I get to be when I'm in a moment where people are really into it and I've got a, it really works well because I've been doing it for so long and there's so many people that have followed me through the years that that longevity really does a big difference. And again, I'll just go back, but being success, being there, and part of staying there is to be able to work through not being successful at that moment. I think long-term success comes from being able to tough out being a non-success during periods of time.
And I find that super interesting. And it's like, again, wisdom, I think, came at a later year because I'm wondering when you were, at the ECMAs with an Acoustic Sin and seeing, you were on Mike Bullard and everything seemed like it was going to really, it was going to open up for you. And maybe it didn't really plan it. We probably obviously didn't plan out how you were hoping it did, but how did you feel then and how were you able to push?
Yeah. Look, at the time we thought like with the Mike Bullard and winning the ECMA and we had put out an album, we had good management. We thought we were going in the moon, we were 20, I was 25 or whatever, or maybe older. I don't remember, but regardless, we thought we were going to the moon. And when that crushed, it was devastating for sure. But Tracy Starr, and that was a big success too. Different than an Acoustic Sin, different kind of success. It had more commercial radio success.
There was several years that went in between.
A few years. I mean, it didn't last long like the others because I was at a different point in my life. But regardless, it was from the peak of an Acoustic Sin to go out again with Tracy Starr in a different way, but to have a song be on the top, the top of Canadian on the 50 Canadian rock chart was a big deal. It was definitely another peak for me. That was exciting and similar, except the difference was at that time I was like, well, not going to the moon, because I was more realistic. It was like I was just happy that it did what it did, and it was content with that. But at the time, it just didn't feel right to continue because it was just not practical for where I was in my life. And when and that's when I started playing alone more. That was just more practical with where I was in my life at that time. And I took the same kind of mentality playing alone. You know, I gave it my all and tried to make it as successful as I could, you know, and that came about from getting the Manhattan gig at the O2 complex. You know, I started playing on Monday nights at the Paramount in the front. It started like that. And then they opened the Manhattan bar. In fact, they showed it to me while they were building it, that big room. And they said, you know, this is going to be a happening bar. Be playing in here. That's what we want, you know? And I looked at that room and I said, you know what, boys, it's too much of a big room for one guy. It's just, you know, you need bands in here. And they're like, yeah, we're going to get bands, but it'd be great to have you a weeknight on a weeknight, you know, Stephen LeBlanc playing on a weeknight. And I remember being scared to death of doing that. But at the same time, it seemed like the logical thing to do to keep what I was doing going and step it up. So I did it because I was, even though I was scared, I did it because I felt like I needed to. If I was going to expand what it was I was trying to do playing alone. And that ended up being a big success. And it was a success for years, you know, like it was my job for a decade almost, you know, like it was a good job, you know, it was great. I loved it, you know, it was awesome. And it dwindled like everything else does, you know, and the whole bar scene dwindled in general, you know, all of it dwindled, right? The world changes.
Sure. And I'm wondering how I you know, you mentioned a while ago, I was realistic. I've been being realistic. I find that being realistic sometimes is very toxic to a lot of people because.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know. Yeah.
Especially in the arts, because people will tell other people, be realistic. That's not going to happen and things like that. And I find it kind of contrasts to what you said, that you think that if you work hard enough, anything can be successful. So I find, how do you contrast yourself for these two, like being realistic versus thinking that anything is possible type scenario?
I think age, right? Like I think that, you know, I'm 48 years old, right? So I've got enough experience in the music industry to know what is real and what is not. When I was 25, I didn't, I didn't know what the limits could be. Well, there's never any limits. There really isn't. You limit yourself, and that's a very good point. But you do come with experience. You come to the point where you maybe do want to limit yourself. Maybe you're not looking to do what you did when you were 25. Maybe that's not what you're after, you know? So you change. I mean, I've got a great life, and I love living in New Brunswick. And you know, people always say, well, Steve, you could have played guitar with anybody. You know, you moved to LA or moved to, you know, like... You know, and that's all fine and dandy. I have no interest in that because, you know, I got a family. I live here. I love it. I just want a musician. I want to play music. That's who I am. But I'm not seeking any kind of, what's the word of? I'm not seeking any kind of recognition. I just want to be able to do what it is that I do here for the people that enjoy what I do and the people that know me here. I built a little career here doing what I do, and I'm quite happy with that. And somebody who was 25, I'd say, yeah, don't do what I'm doing right now because you're 25. You got to shoot for the stars. You got to build your brand. You've got to, you know, whatever it is that you got to do. But I'm just at a point in my life where I'm not really interested in that. I feel like I've done all that as much. I've taken that as far as I was able to take it, and I roll the dice and I got what I got. But now I'm taking what I got and I'm using it to be who I am now. And to me, that's my reality, you know? So I guess that's what I mean by realistic. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, you're realistic in what you want yourself. Like you're not being realistic towards what other people think that you should be doing. You're being realistic in saying, this is my life. This is how I want to live. And this is how.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I'm kind of curious if now you have all this experience in the industry, if you're looking back, I'm sure there are things you wish went differently, but do you think there's things that you wish you would have changed, that you would have done differently, and kind of major decisions that you felt that maybe you went the wrong way on, that you wish you did something different?
Not really. Like, and I know that it seems weird for me to say that. Did I make mistakes? I made tons of mistakes, but in a weird way, I think those mistakes were necessary. With that said, I was always all in, and I gave it my all, and I always have, and I still do. In the confines of what I do now, I'm 100%. I mean, for example, these live streams, like, it's not a big deal, and I know I could just put a phone in front of me and do it, but I don't treat it like that. I work really hard at doing a good job for the people, but even for me, because I've got a lot of pride in how I do things and what I do, well, that came from being all in all the time, including the mistakes. But looking back and looking around, I mean, not a lot of people were all in like I was. I always really was passionate, and I never faked it. So I have no regrets, man. No regrets. It was always real with me. You know, I never pretended. So that, along with that, came the mistakes, but I wouldn't trade the mistakes for that. You know,
I can rephrase and say, let's say you could go back in time and give your 20-year-old self some advice. What would you tell him?
Work harder. You know, I think I thought I worked as hard as I could, but I didn't. You know, I, looking back, like, I've got more of a work ethic now. I don't know if it's because I'm older but when you're 20, you kind of got a work ethic if you're serious about something, but it's not the same. Like, I guess I get, and maybe it's, but that's what I would say to myself. I'd say work harder. You know what? With age comes less time. And I think that as you get less time, you want to do things better and better, and put more time in to do things better, because there's less time to dally. You know, okay. What I mean? Like, so. But when you're 20, you got all the time in the world. So even though you really put your all into something, sometimes you dilly dally more. And if I could go back, I'd say, you know what? Like, if I could talk to my 20-year-old self, it's like, work harder. I know you think you're working hard, but work harder at it, you know?
Can we get more specific? What does work harder at 20-year-old Stephen Leblanc's career look like?
Wake up, do something for your career, you know? Like, wake up and do something to advance your music, whether it's your playing, whether it's reading about the music industry, or whether it's going out and just performing. You know, mind you, I did that a lot. I mean, I couldn't have performed more. I played with everybody. I played as much as I could. I never, but I could have read more books, maybe. I could have, about music. I could have done more recording. I could have worked harder at buying the right gear to do that, you know, and spent more time doing that. I mean, eventually I did. It's just that I could have done it earlier, but, you know, I guess I wasn't driven enough to go out and do that. But yeah, it's hard. I worked really hard at what I do most of my life. So it's hard for me to pinpoint one thing, because I did, you know, I've always been, I love what I do, and I've always been passionate about it. So for me, I always did really give it my all, you know, so it's hard for me to even though I'll say to myself, work harder. It's minute. It really is.
Because I know that you at one point you spent your 9-to-5s working on, I think it was an acoustic synth then, but I remember you telling me that you guys went into this office place or this basement or whatever, and you, from 9-to-5 every day, you would work it like a job. And I think that there's a lot of people who don't put that amount of dedication.
Yeah, absolutely. And that taught me a lot too. Then I was working really, we were 23 or whatever. We were working really hard. It was like a full-time job with the touring, the rehearsing, the putting the music together, the making the albums, all of it. And from that point on, I did it like really like a full-time job. So I learned a lot from that experience of working with the band. We really took it to the next level. I learned a lot about, I always worked hard, but I learned a lot about what things you should do, or focused on the things that you need to do instead of just, you know, sitting home playing guitar all day, you know. Yeah. But again, like I said, sitting at home playing guitar all day served me well too, you know. So it's, well, like,
interesting, because you had, like, you progressed incredibly fast. I've spoken with you before. You within 2 years you were teaching, you were taking classes, you were teaching classes within 2 years. So, like, this structured learning that you did for yourself worked phenomenally well. And I'm not sure if it's the structure that your teacher gave you that was able to work so well, but did you have like a plan, like a plan in case, so this is how, what I need to do to get better and then achieve them, or you kind of?
No, it was harder than I think what happened was, and even my teacher would teach me, but there was, he didn't give me a plan. Like it was more like, you know, he'd show me how to do something and said, when you come next week, hopefully you can do that, you know? But I always took it further. And then I would buy, at the time there was no internet. We didn't have computers, and I'd buy a guitar magazine and there'd be tablatures in guitar magazine. And I would learn, I started learning beyond what my teacher was teaching me. I would go further and I'd practice that stuff. And, but there was no schedule. I just tried to consume as much as I could.
Okay. And did you ever, so you had your whole career in music, but did you ever feel like it would, like, obviously you probably felt this, that it would be easier to just to go get a job, but how did you fight that urge? Or did you not, never feel that, that you should just go?
Oh yeah. No, I did. Absolutely. I had wanted to quit definitely a couple times in my career where I felt like, I'd given so much to it and it wasn't giving me back. You know, and just thought, you know what, I just want to like get a real job and be normal, you know, not that I'm not normal, but you know what I mean? Being a musician is a really difficult, to make a career as a musician is there's no university course for that. And it's not, it's there's a lot of improv and there's a lot of self-learning and it's very, very difficult. There's no roadmap. So, especially then, you know, now you can go online and you can learn things, but there was none of that back then. So it was even more difficult. So as I was doing that, you know, when you work really hard at something for a couple of years and it wasn't working out, sometimes you just felt like giving up. But I think my passion for playing music has overrode that. Like where I actually did quit once, I can think in particular where I decided, and I went to UNB for a while. I took business administration and computer science but I ended up not finishing and I went back to playing the guitar because it was stronger than me. I need a guitar. Yeah. That was the driving force. I need to play. And I knew that in the back of my mind, but I was trying to fight it. And then the first good musicians that said, hey, we're doing this. We really want you in the guitar. I was like, yeah, count me in, you know? And then that was it. I was done, you know, stopped going to school. And you know, it was just stronger than me, the instrument, right? It was something that I was so passionate about that. And I said, that's a good point. When you do something like that, that's difficult like that, you do have to be, and I think this goes with everything in life, whatever career you choose, you really need to be passionate about it. You need to, you need to have an interest in it. And when you first get involved in it, it might be harder than you think. And you might not love it right away, but really passionate about that. As time goes along and it gets easier, you'll become even more passionate and you need that passion to be able to put at it, you know? Yeah.
How do you find the passion on these days where the passion is just not there?
I'm still passionate about playing the guitar. That's never gone away. I'm still passionate about entertaining. I mean, if I wasn't, I wouldn't be live streaming. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure,
I wouldn't
be. I'm sure that there are times where you just, you know, it's hard. It's a slog. It's the writer's block. It's the whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. Sometimes I just give it a break for a few days. You know, I walk away from it. And sometimes it's a couple months. But I don't walk away from performing for a couple months because it's what I do for a living. But I mean, I don't pay attention to it. Like I'll do what I got to do and that's it. But the longest that lasts is might be a couple months and then it reignites again, you know, something will reignite it, you know, whether it's a project that comes along or, you know, whatever, or maybe it's just a certain show that I play that really reignites my passion. You know, it just depends, but it never goes away a long, long time. You know, I'm always passionate. And even when I'm, I still love what I do. I take so much pride in what I do that even if it's not going well at that time, I still find it in me to do it well.
Yeah, cool. No, well, I really appreciate the time that you took to come out and talk with me in this weird COVID times. And
I appreciate it.
It's fun to see how you've adapted. And I think that there's, it shows to maybe the reason that when you get success or people who find success and people who don't, that, you know, you got stuck in this position where your livelihood just got cut from under you. Like, there's, that's it. You're done. Like, this is what you were doing for your life. Well, we're going to close these things for a long time. And you found a way to start that. You went to Facebook Live. You pushed through the obstacles that were imposed on your way to find a solution that maybe doesn't work exactly like it did, but it's getting you towards somewhere where it might, right?
Hey, absolutely.
So this drive is very, it's inspirational. I think it's interesting. And it's a reminder for me talking with you and how roadblocks are going to come. But whatever you're doing, roadblocks are going to come. And this is a particularly nasty one where it's like, well, you know, you can't go in front of a crowd anymore. What are you going to do? Well, when push comes to shove, you find some kind of ways to go around it. And
that's right. It's improvisation, and resilience, you know, which are common traits with musicians, you know, you just find a way to, you just got to find a way to, you know, it happens a lot with venues, shows, oh, you know, you get to a venue, they don't have the right sound system, or they, you know, there's so many, you're constantly working with challenges. And this was just, this one was a bit different and a doozy, my bad, but it was just another challenge. And part of being an entertainer is always filled with challenges, whether it's your car breaking down to get it to the next show, or the hotel room is not right, or the, you know, so you, it's just another one of those things. This was a challenge for me, but I learned a lot from this, and I'm really enjoying it. I must say, like, I'm surprised at how much I'm enjoying Wednesday nights. Like, I really, really didn't think I was going to, and it was like pulling teeth for me to do it the first time. But now I'm like, you know what? This might be something that, when everything goes back to normal, I'm going to go back to playing live for sure. But I might keep doing this because I see a value in this, because I see, how could I explain this? Like, the people that used to come watch me play, let's say at the Manhattan, for example, I'm using that because that's the background that I use for the Wednesday show, and I play it at the Manhattan on Wednesday. So it's kind of, that's a theme for Wednesdays. Well, a lot of those people that are on there, houses, wives, kids now, don't come out and see me play at a venue anymore. But after this is done, this becomes a habit. When everything goes back to normal, maybe on a winter's night after work, you know, they're at 8 o'clock at night, they might tune in on a Wednesday night, because it's again, for me, my little live stream that I do there, it's about me playing the music, but it's not just about that. It's about, if you read the comments, it's about the people that are all getting together, and I can see strangers saying, hey, so-and-so, because they talked the week before on the messages. Like, it's all about their picture of what that is. It's not just me playing the tune. So I might keep that going after it's done, you know, because I have a feeling I'll be doing this till, like, I have a feeling I won't be playing any live shows for a long time. I don't think any musicians are going to be, I hope I'm wrong, but as they drop I know restaurants and stuff, but as far as large gatherings and bars hiring entertainment, like, bars will be open because they could, if they have a restaurant. But a bar is not going to hire a musician if they can only be half capacity, because they won't be able to justify it. So until things actually go back to normal, guys like me and bands and stuff, we're pretty much out of luck. Like, I don't think, you know, and people talk 2021. I hope that's not going to happen, but it's a possibility, you know.
Cool. Well, no, I really appreciate all of this. It's real, like I said, it's inspiring to see how this is the mentality you have to have. You have to accept the roadblocks and go through. And I think that you delivered a lot of valuable lessons in this podcast. So thank you again. And I'm looking forward to talking to you at another point.
I'll say good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you.
Oh, bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to the whole episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Looking back at this interview, thinking about what I can apply to my own life, I think a lot of it revolves around the part of the mindset of going from a guitar player to an entertainer. I think that that's an important part that you probably only get with a lot of experience, and maybe you can only do after you have a lot of experience at creating your art. But I think a lot of it lies in the authenticity that you bring to a crowd if you're doing a live performance, and the people see you for who you are, and that you're a real person like everybody else. And I think I think in general, that goes a long way. So it's something that I want to keep in mind as I'm trying to create some kind of art, and how I can involve the crowd or the people listening or everybody in a way that shows more a more authentic side to myself, I guess. So hopefully you'll see a lot more of that in Hired by Passion the second season. So I'd like to send the question off to you guys and gals. What did you retain from this episode? What do you think that you could apply to your own life? So let me know on Facebook if you find the Hired by Passion page. You can find this episode and put in the comments. Let me know what you really learned from this episode and how you can apply it to your own life. And feel free to send me a message. I'd love to connect with the people listening and let me know if I can help you in any way turn your passion into a career. So thank you, and hopefully we'll connect soon on Facebook. Thanks for listening to the Hired by Passion podcast. If you enjoyed the show, I would greatly appreciate a 5-star rating and review on iTunes.